A very good afternoon to you, and thanks for joining us for another marathon programme. Between now and 9 o'clock, myself and Joanne will be guiding you through all of the live action, plus some great guests. We've commentators and reporters at every GAA game. Our first commentary match is the Leinster Hurling semi-final, where underdogs Laois take on a Galway side that was on fire in the last round against Dublin.
Puck out for Galway to be taken by Colm Callanan. It's a huge one. It's going to drop about 13 metres. Runs all the way in, and it's another goal. And it's a hat-trick for Cathal Mannion.
We're live in Seattle on day three of the US Open Golf. Offaly's Shane Lowry is just four shots off the lead.
It's a bit early to be talking about winning. There's a lot of golf to be played yet. So if I could just go out, keep doing my own thing. You know, I'm driving the ball well. My arm play feels good. You know, as I said, I feel like my putting is getting where I want it. So, yeah, I mean, you never know what could happen come Sunday, you know.
And we're live at the final day of Royal Ascot with commentary on the big races from there. We'll hear from Andy Lee as he confirms his world title fight with Billy Joe Saunders for Thomond Park. Our Saturday panel at 3 features golfer Des Smith, hurling's Donal O'Grady and Gaelic football's Seamus McEnany. We hear from a remarkable young man, Desi Fitzgerald from Charleville, former Cork minor hurler, battling to walk again amidst a tale of incredible adversity. Feel free to get involved on Twitter at SatSportRTE or at SportsDes. Our text number is 51551. This is Saturday Sport. We're with you until 9 o'clock. A little known fact, Des Smith played soccer for a team from Laytown called East Coast Albion.
True. Long time
what
ago.
What position did you play?
Oh, God, centre. I was always centre forward because when I played Gaelic, I was centre field, centre half back, or centre half forward. Now, I think I was
This fella's saying you were a very good footballer.
I was top scorer in the soccer league 1 year. Yeah. I loved playing football.
Did you?
Yeah, I had to give it up though at 17 because I was taking golf that serious. Yeah. And you know the injuries you get in your hands. It didn't suit golfers.
It's strange the way. It's a very individual sport versus a team sport, that whole thing. Yeah. What are your views on that?
I never bought into that. You spend a lot of time on your own practicing. That's part of the deal. But if you're a member of a golf club, you're playing on the Junior Cup team, the Senior Europe, you're playing with other guys. Or if you're on the Barton Shield team, it's a foursomes match, you play with it. So there's an element of that. In fact, when I gave up football, I was more or less attacked by the local manager of my GAA team telling me how selfish I was. But years down the road, he came back to me and said, you know, you made a good decision. So, no, listen, it's not. People say that. It's not. If you're a member of a golf club, you feel like a big community. It's like any other club.
Yeah, OK, then. Science my backside. Football is no better now than 20 years ago. Science, tactics, dietitians have destroyed football, Seamus McEnany.
I wouldn't say that. I think the game has turned professional, as Donal said here, in everything only in reality. Science has helped, has developed players. The standard, I believe, maybe the systems hasn't helped it, but the standard of football and the standard of fitness are a completely different level than Donald's time of drinking a couple of pints before the All-Ireland final.
I can imagine you saying that, that you had a couple of pints before an All-Ireland final. Those young ex-players of yours around the country going, geez, what?
That was the culture days at the time. Yeah. I mean, the thing is the fitness. I suppose really when you look at fitness in hurling, fitness began to change, we'd say, in the mid-90s when, you know, Clare were the reports coming out and there wasn't any. You know, there was no internet sort of that time, but the reports started coming out that Clare were running up mountains and running through forests and this and that, and that they were
early in the morning, yes,
late at night, and this and that, and suddenly the physical stakes went up then, and if you wanted to match them, well, you had to match their physical preparation. So, you know, and after that, then it became more scientific. And
at the moment, the minimum standard is to be professionally fit. You don't see a man carrying a belly playing at full forward at the county level anymore. There is no more brilliant players like Jimmy Keaveney, like McNally. There is no more of these boys.
I apologise officially on behalf of RTÉ's Jimmy
Keaveney. A small kid would call it.
What are you just saying?
I am saying you don't see this anymore at inter-county level. The minimum standard is be professionally fit. That's the minimum standard, isn't it?
Jimmy Keaveney was fit enough to score 2-6 in an All-Ireland final.
He was brilliant.
Yeah. You see, Jimmy,
a
Jimmy,
different era.
Jimmy had a great balance when he was kicking frees and whatever else, and that's what he did well. But I mean, that's what he was brought back for. First of all, by Heffernan, he brought him back because he could kick the frees. But then Jimmy, as he got much fitter, he became, you know, he was a full forward, an integral part of, you know, Hannah outside him, him inside, and you know, Anton Carroll and whatever else. So he just wasn't like, you know, like a pinch hitter or some fella who was just wheeled on like American football to take the kicks. Like he became an integral part of that great Dublin team, you know. So
but you don't see that style of player. Even in the 90s, the thing has developed on.
I suppose if you talk about Gaelic football now, the full back is likely to run up the field anyway. So you have to chase him, you know. That's the situation. I mean, I can remember back to, was it 83, was it? And Ray Healy, I think, was the Dublin cornerback, was the first fella I ever saw. He went all the way up the field and they got a goal, and Cork left him at the halfway line, sort of, you know. So if we want to look at the origins of tactics, I mean, go back the same year, Pat Spillane was the first fella that I saw go back into his own square, field, and then run up the field, and Jack O'Shea and whatever else. So,
I sometimes laugh at Pat if he's on it, but you know, the wing forwards coming back and being defensive systems. Sure, Pat was the originating of that. He was a brilliant player, but he was the one man that was picking up balls in the full back line.
I'll point that out to him tomorrow. indeed.
The 8th of October 2011, I was playing a county semi-final with my club, Charleville, and I dived in for a tackle. I collided between two players. The impact, you know, I was going pretty quickly. My two legs were off the ground. I got two knees into the chest, and my head sprung back. And look, at that point, I didn't know. I was in a daze for a few seconds, and I realised after probably 10 seconds that I couldn't feel or move anything from the shoulders down, which was a frightening experience.
I can imagine. And what happened next? Were you brought straight to Cork or to Dublin?
There was two nurses in the field, you know, and they made sure that I wasn't moved at all, thankfully, because without them, who knows where I'd be. But look, an ambulance arrived shortly afterwards and they brought me to CUH, and then I was transferred straight to the Mater Hospital for MRI scans and x-rays. And look, that's where they told me that I had fractured C4 and that I had damaged my spinal cord. There was a bleed in the centre of my spinal cord and a bruise around that. Central spinal cord syndrome is what they named it as. They said you may or may not move from the shoulders down again.
I mean, the work you have done since then in your rehab is quite extraordinary. The amount of physical work, and the money is towards keeping that going and keeping the improvement going. Can you give us an idea of your week in terms of the amount of rehab and work you have to do?
I go to this place in Patrick's Well. It's about 25 minutes away. It's First Steps Rehabilitation, it's called. And there, look, I spend between 2 and 4 hours a day. It's at the beginning, it's a weight training program. After that, I go on to a locomat, which is, look, a machine to get me walking. Again, I'm like Robocop inside the machine is what I'm like. So I spend between 2 and 4 hours there.
What does it do, Des?
Yeah, so it really, what it is to try and retrain my brain again, you know, to get my legs working. Because it's obviously, look, some signals have stopped going down to my legs because of the bleed in my spinal cord. But it actually, in a way, it's trying to retrain it again. It's trying to rewire my brain so that I, like, when I do come off the machine, I do find that I have more coordination. I have a little bit more balance. So, look, I find it absolutely brilliant, and it I walk for it in 1 kilometre each time, which, look, the benefits have shown from it, you know. My walking has definitely improved because of it.
And amidst all of that, you got married, which was a fantastic boost for everybody.
I did, yes, I did. I left the rehabilitation hospital to get married to my wife, Sarah, who has been absolutely amazing throughout all these days. But, yeah, a great experience, look, a great goal. I got on my feet on that day, you know. I stood up. Now, fair enough, I was being held for a lot of it, but it was brilliant and a huge goal for me to aim towards. And straight back to the National Rehab Hospital again after that.
You probably needed, apart from your physical strength, and you're a big man for people who can't see, you're a big, strong, fit man. That was obviously a big help, I presume, that you had a lot of natural strength anyway, given how strenuous the work is.
For sure, yeah. And again, that's where the sporting background helped me unbelievably. So, look, I was a really fit, mobile man before this, you know, out training 5-6 nights a week, and look, to go from that to the complete opposite extreme was very hard to take initially. But, you know, that drive and determination I had in the field continued on as soon as I did get some signals down to various muscles around my body, because I have just continued to work hard and look, be mindful of everything, you know, be mindful of my diet, be mindful of doing as much as I possibly can for all of the muscles that I have working.
Again, this is difficult, but apart from your physical strength, the amount of mental strength you and your family have required in the last few years has been probably unmatched for any other family.
2 months before the accident, my younger brother Mike passed away tragically. And for me, look, I immersed myself in sport after that. That was my way of dealing with it. I just trained harder than I ever did. And 2 months later, I ended up paralysed from the shoulders down. And I got home from rehab, you know, with limited mobility, and I came home in the August 2012, and the following October, my younger brother James, another keen sports player, went to work out in the gym, and he passed away of the sudden death syndrome. So look, I was completely lost for a few months trying to deal with all that. But look, my family's strength have just been, they've been absolute pillars. They've been amazing, you know. And seeing how strong they were, you know, allowed me to do the same, really, you know. Look, we spoke about it an awful lot. We remember them. We speak about them every time we meet. But yeah, look, it took a lot of mental strength, for sure, to deal with everything, the loss of the two of them, and to deal with the limited mobility, yes.
These guys are never going to win a Leinster title. They'll probably never appear in a Leinster final. They play like that. They think like that. It's not their fault. It's what they have become conditioned to. Longford, probably not a whole lot better. Maybe a little bit more organised in what they're doing. Maybe a little bit more talented. But we've seen some good stuff here this evening, yep. But mostly individual stuff, mostly just sporadic stuff. Kicking scores has been excellent, but the passing, the approach, the lack of speed in the play, the lack of intelligent running, the lack of taking options up front, way too pedestrian. There are three tiers in football, Brian. The top tier, the middle tier, the bottom tier, and I hate saying this, but Carlo are at the bottom of the tier.
Does it come
tier.
To a population base? Is that one of the factors? I presume it is too. Carlo, a small county.
It is a small county and not a tradition with football. And, you know, these young fellas, when they're growing up, they don't dream about winning Leinster titles. They don't dream about playing in front of 50,000
people. Well, they've had some great clubs, and like Yerog winning the title and whatever.
They have, yeah. Brian, but that doesn't do it either. I just don't know what the GAA are going to do for these teams. I don't know what they're going to do with these teams. You have to take your hat off to the players like that who soldier right throughout a year and present themselves here this evening and still end up being beaten by Longford.
What about Aegon O'Farrell's proposal, the GAA president? And I know that has been suggested before, and there are different ways of looking at it, but a team like Carlow, those less successful counties, can come back in from a group, let it be a different competition altogether, after losing in the provincial championship, to come back in at a later stage, the winners of a particular group or for a lower tier, to come back maybe into the All-Ireland, the Sam Maguire race.
Yeah, yeah,
or will the chasm still be there when that happens?
Absolutely. But Brian,
but they're still playing at their own level.
Yeah, correct. Come back in to do what? You know, we have to. It's not about games. There's a fundamental issue here that these teams.
That's the key.
Absolutely.
You think it's not about games.
It's not about games.
They're not going to improve or fine tune by having games.
We're talking about giving them more games. More games for what? There's a fundamental problem here. They're not as talented. They're not being coached well. They don't have the resources. So give them another game in the summer, another two games in the summer, and at some stage they're going to hit the wall and be beaten by 19-20.
But hold on. Only one team can win an All Ireland senior title.
No, but there are 8 or 9 or 10 teams who can compete for one. Yeah. Compete for one. The 60 who can compete for one. But at the moment, we have 6 or 7 teams who can actually compete for an All-Ireland title. Sam Maguire, the rest of them aren't even competing.
But I think it's great honour, Tom, in a team like Carlow, being able, the players, there is a great desire for them, a great intention at all times that they want to wear the county jersey. That's where they come from, Carlow. They love to compete at senior level in the provincial championship. And it's like a Manchester United or a Barcelona. Some teams are better than others. You have Oisín McConville in the studio. They've only won one All-Ireland title ever. They've won Ulster titles, but still, don't tell them you don't want an Ulster title. Don't tell them, oh, you won't put on an Armagh jersey because you're not going to win an All-Ireland title.
No, but those players have always been with a possibility. And yes, Oisín himself would say they should have won more All-Irelands. They were good enough to win more All-Irelands. But these teams we're looking at here, Brian, they're not even thinking in terms of All-Irelands. And yeah, how long are these guys going to keep doing? And this is a doubled knife edged effect. Is one is, you know, they won't put in the same level of effort because they know they're not going to win anything. But the counties need them to actually put in more effort than the other teams. And that is a major, major difficulty. The motivation to play for your county, there has to be something at the end of the day for these guys.
I would disagree with you fundamentally that they don't put in the same effort.
Well, they don't really, Brian. Yeah, they turn up the same amount of times maybe and they do the same level of training, but they're not applying themselves in the same way as the top counties.
Eamon and Meath, what disgraceful Thomas from Tommy Carr about Carlow. He should remember it was by luck he was born a Dub, and do his comments mean if he couldn't ever see Dublin winning something, he wouldn't have bothered ever lining out for Dublin. That says more about him than it even does about the hard-working Carlow footballers. Way to kick a team when they're down. Then Michael Duffy in Mullingar says Tommy is 100% correct with his comments. It's up to all counties to keep up with the rest if they really want it. It's easier to moan than to keep up. Look at Sligo today. Division 4 beat Division 1. The arrogance of Tom Carr is hard to believe. Maybe all the good players in the lesser counties should transfer to Dublin and play with them. Willie, what do you think about what Tommy has been saying?
Yeah, I think Tommy is dead right. I think the association has probably forgotten about the 10 teams at the bottom, maybe. There's probably 8 teams in the country that can possibly win in All-Ireland. There's another 10 after that in the second tier. And Tommy's right, it's probably gone into a 3-tier. You know, Carlow are at the bottom. But as he said here, we probably should be taking our hats off to the likes of Carlow and the Longford. It's easy to tug out week in, week out for the likes of Dublin, the likes of Kerry, the likes of Donegal, because they know at the end of the day they have a chance of winning a provincial championship or possibly an All-Ireland. When you tug out for Carlow, it's purely, you know, for the enjoyment of the game, because...
But
you know,
is that the mindset, Willie? That's what Tommy was saying is one of the biggest problems outside, perhaps the way you're treated outside of your own county. Is the mindset, does that mean that you don't put in the same amount of effort?
It's not the mindset, John, but it's been realistic. And realistic, every day we wake up and, you know, you have your dreams when the championship is starting, and then you come out and you're being thumped by teams by 17 and 18 points, and you're just, you know, you're back down. There's lads talking about giving, you know, these teams an extra game. An extra game will just drive them further back in, further back away if they're being beaten by 10 or 20 points. I mean, we came down here today, I spoke on another radio, and what was the expectation? And I said, if we can stay within 10 points of Longford, that, you know, that'll be our best. You know, Laois beat us by 17 points. You know, they should have beat Kildare, but Kildare turned them over by 30 in the second day. And Antrim beat Laois. So how far down are we? You know, is this association forgetting about the likes of the team? Because we just don't have the resources. And the likes of the Carlows, as we said, we have guys that can walk away from teams and come back the following year and walk away and come back. If you do that in Dublin or Donegal or any of those teams, you don't ever play with your county again. So that's why they don't have those problems. They have their best 15, their best 30 every single time they go out, Joanne.
And Joanne, on top of that, I mean, if I ask Willie, are the best 15 guys in the county of Carlow on the pitch in front of us?
Definitely not. I could pick maybe 10 or 12 players that would definitely be pushing for their places on that team.
Why aren't they?
You know, because they, as we said, they wake up every morning and they say, you know, what's in it for me? Why should I train for 6 months to be beaten by Laois or beaten by the Longfords? Or maybe even worse, Joanne, turn up against Dublin and be beaten by 30 or 40 points, humiliated. I mean, that's why they won't put in the effort. And it's just, you know, it is a shame, because there's so many good people and good supporters in Carlow that are looking for just to support some team, and it's just not happening at the moment, Joanne.
And the double effect of that is, if I asked a Dublin supporter or player, are the best 15 on the pitch for Dublin, the answer is yes, they are. So not alone are the Carlows not getting their best players on the pitch, but the better teams are getting their best players on the pitch, so they never have a hope. But we started all this thing, did you? J GAA started about putting funds and resources into Dublin hurling and Dublin football, and we have to have Dublin. And I'm a Dublin. Here's me arguing against it. Look at the sponsorship deals that some of these counties are getting. Talk to the Longfords and the Carlos about their sponsorship deals, and it'll be a smirk and a laugh. And that's where we need to start. The resources, the fundamentals of the game, so which we have neglected.
It sounds like you're saying we need to pool, because Dublin obviously go out, they get
correct,
their own.
We need to pool. Of course we need to pool. That's what it's all about. We're an amateur organisation, but we're not. There are equals, and some are more equal than others. That's the case in the GA and the association at the minute. And we've done nothing to address it. And all we come out with is, will we have 4-8s? Will we have an open draw? Will we give them an extra game? It's a load of rubbish, Joanne, to be quite honest with you.